Hello, and welcome to Pucknology After Dark. But wait, it's still light outside. I'm confused. I guess the sharks were a little confused at what time the game was at, too. Anyhow, we recap the afternoon's action. Here with me is Ian Reed and Kevin Lacey. Gentlemen, it's good to see you this afternoon with the brunch with the sharks, I guess.
Brunch with the sharks.
Yeah, brunch with the sharks.
Ooh.
So, kind of just let's quickly go over before we head into the audible section. What was your initial thoughts on the game?
Everything's stupid.
Everything's stupid.
I feel like I've seen this game before, like the last 5 years that they go to Philly. Like the games are always like this, except the difference is the Sharks end up winning in the end.
Yeah, it was kind of a little bit of a strange game. But before we get any further, this let's see if had Google not screwed up their broadcasting hangouts, I would be able to get this right. But give me one second and I'll pull it up. There we go. All
Well,
right.
Afternoon Delight, I believe, is brought to you by audible.com. Take it away, Eric.
Yeah, Audible.com, an Amazon company. We've partnered with Audible.com to provide this show, and it helps us out and it helps you out. So they have over 180,000 audiobooks. Sign up for your free trial at audible.com/PAD. You get a free audiobook, we get helped out, maybe we can get some internet for Eric Kura, and it's all good. But what wasn't all good was tonight's game, or this afternoon's game. I'm
Today's
gonna,
game.
yeah, I'm gonna owe somebody a cheesesteak if you can catch that on the broadcast. So, like I said before, joined with me is Ian Reed and at Kevin Lacey. If I can get this graphic going, because like I said before.
Graphics, we don't need no stinking graphics.
And well, of course, the graphic that I have doesn't have at Kevin Lacey's hand on it,
Ah, that's why I
but
made my own.
it does have Ian Reed. So you
We
have
are all
at
Kevin
Eric,
Lacey.
yeah, you have at Eric Landy and at Irene Technology, and of course you have at Kevin Lacey. You can hit us up on Twitter, get your questions on the air, or of course you can always use the YouTube chat. We do read those occasionally. I guess what I take from this game is that Dell, I think he's kind of proven himself to be a good backup,
Dell
right?
has
He's still.
proven that the Sharks need to add a goalie at the trade deadline, according to everyone else who has not watched a Sharks game this year. Aaron Dell was awesome again today.
Yeah, Ian, what was your thoughts on the goaltending tonight?
Goaltending was fine. Aaron Dell was may have been the only Shark that actually deserved to win today. Other than that, I don't know. But yeah, no, Aaron Dell was great.
Yes, I totally agree. I think Aaron Dell really held them in that first period. I joined about halfway through it, so I just kind of saw the Sharks under siege. We've kind of been talking about, is Dell a proven backup? Will he be good enough for the stretch run? I think tonight definitely, God, I keep saying tonight, but today I think he definitely proved that he does have that mettle and that kind of courage under fire, especially when you looked at the first period today. He just kind of kept them in there, kept it together. The Sharks could have wilted after that non-allowed goal, and they kind of did actually. The momentum kind of flowed towards Philadelphia. And Dell kept them in it. I mean, it could have easily been 2-0, 3-0 after that first period, but Dell made some really, really good saves. He had that wicked glove save off of Wayne Simmonds, and it was insane. I mean, overall, he really proved a great backup tonight. And you know what? I hope this shows Peter DeBoer that you can have some faith in him. What do you guys think about just the deployment of Dell tonight versus, maybe putting him in yesterday or tomorrow? What do
No,
you think is realistic, right?
I think after the game, the last game that they played against Boston, I don't know, I'm trying to like black out this entire road trip so far in my brain, but after I thought last game, I thought that Dell came in. I didn't think, I know some people got really on me when I kind of bitched out Jones a little bit, and it was probably deserved, but at the same time, he hasn't really been sharp this road trip. As sharp as you would like him to be. So I thought that, pulling him, starting, putting Dell in net, I thought Dell was fine in the Boston game. It was kind of the situation, same situation he got put into in Pittsburgh, where the game was just out of hand already, and you can't really pin that on Aaron Dell. And then I think starting him today was absolutely the right choice, and I think starting him tomorrow would be the right choice. If the only problem I have with that is you would like to see the team in front of him respond better with Dell in net, and we haven't seen that, so I don't know what you do at this point.
Dell,
Yeah,
Aaron Dell
there's.
definitely should have been in the game. You guys talked about it on the last After Dark show that, by Dell playing, when was that, Thursday night, that he would probably lose his start today. And so it was nice that PDB held to what I would assume would be his game plan. Jones needs rest. Jones looks like a goalie who needed rest. He got none of it during the All-Star break. You've got Aaron Dell, who coming into the game had a 960 save percentage, 5-on-5 to lead the league, but we need a better backup. And Aaron Dell once
Clearly.
again comes in calm, composed, flashing the leather, being as athletic as he needs to be, and kept the Sharks in the game. He needs more starts. Hell, start him tomorrow against New Jersey if he feels fine.
Well, I mean,
I would.
I'm never an advocate for starting a goalie in a back-to-back situation. I definitely think that that should be Jonesy's game. But you know what? I mean, to me, tonight or this afternoon, and I'm going to keep doing that
Yeah,
all
I
day.
got you at a four. I'm actually keeping count.
Nice.
Okay. He really proved that he should be the backup of this team, and that he doesn't need anybody to come spell him. He doesn't need any kind of relief. I mean, look, tonight he had a nine. Gosh darn it. Today he had a 943 per save percentage, and you can't ask for any better. I mean, 943 is off the charts. And just kind of quickly going through the stats for the game today,
Yeah, what were the
shots
shot
on
totals
goal,
at the end?
yeah, the shot totals were a little eyebrow raising. The Sharks allowed 35 shots on goal and only had 24 themselves, and that's not something that we see from a Sharks team very often. That's normally an
Philly did,
indicator.
in fairness, Philly did block a ton of shots.
I mean, Philly blocked 17 shots, but the
Yeah.
Sharks blocked 16 shots. So, even just overall volume of shots, I mean, Philly was directing it towards the net more than the Sharks were. I think that that showed in the game. I think territorially, Philadelphia kind of owned this game. I don't know what about you guys, but that's what it looked like to me.
I think, yeah, I mean, I don't want to dispute that too much. I think a lot of those shots, though, did like the Flyers came out like in the first period was where the biggest shot discrepancy was, where, after the goal got called back, the Sharks just kind of were taken completely out of it. I think it was like, I think that's like 14 shots or something in the first period. I thought as the game went on, it started to even out a little bit. I thought that, the Sharks played a better, I thought they played a better second and third than they did the first. I mean, was it good enough? No, but it was better, which doesn't say much.
Yeah,
Yeah, quickly
go
kind of
ahead.
going over that point, but just before you head on, Kevin. First period shots were 4-14. Sharks had four shots on goal. Philadelphia had 14. Second period, Sharks had seven shots on goal. Philadelphia had six. Third period, Sharks had 12 shots on goal. Philadelphia had 13 shots on goal. So that first period really kind of was the
It skewed
disparity in
things
the
a lot.
game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was 14-4, and that was with seven shot blocks by the Sharks in the first period. It was 7-1 in the first period. So 21-5, like, wow. But you do have to give the defense some credit. I mean, the D looked a little, you know, hairy at times, but that's gonna happen every game. I thought that Vlasic and Braun looked pretty good tonight. I know Justin Braun takes a lot of flack. I thought Schlemko still looks inconsistent. I thought Dylan actually was the better player of the two there. And I didn't even really notice Martin and Burns too much outside of the game-winning goal.
Let's kind of go over that because we're already in the defensive talk. The Sharks lose it in overtime on a Brent Burns just gaffe at the red line. He loses the puck, and Williams just kind of comes in, swoops in, takes it in. He's in a breakaway. Aaron Dell almost gets his pad all the way over to stop that. I mean, it would have been a ridiculous save, but just the fact that he even got a little bit of pad on that shot was really crazy. But of course, Wayne Simmons tucks it in, and that's the game. Flyers win 2-1 in overtime. You know, just kind of going over the defensive kind of metrics of the game, I thought, honestly, the Sharks did a good job, I think, of getting Philadelphia to the perimeters of the ice for the most part. I think in that first period, they had a lot of defensive breakdowns, and they were letting some shots in from the slot. I think as the game got, you know, kind of wore on, I think that got a little bit better, and the defense kind of, their defensive game kind of started getting back to its roots. You know, I think the one thing, the silver lining we can take out of this game is that the Sharks only held them to 2 goals. And, you know, the Sharks have been giving up quite a bit of goals in this last little stretch here. I mean, this is now their first 4-game losing streak. However, they have picked up games in 3 of the last 4. So, you know, they have picked up points, And so the silver lining is, I guess, they were getting back to their defensive game. But still, you know, you'd like to see some more offense out of them.
Sorry, I was reading the Google chat. Apparently, traffic and weather from the copter with Eric Landy, the Landy copter.
All right, hold on, give me a second, guys.
But the Sharks are going to need to start getting some goals here soon, because we've been talking for 2 months now about the Sharks have been a fantastic defensive team and their penalty killing is near the top of the league, but
it's not even close. Their penalty killing is again the bottom, is in like the middle bottom. Bottom of the mid third.
Well, at least I didn't say tonight.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
No, but okay. So scratch what I just said. But still, I mean, they're doing very well defensively, but the offense needs to kick in at some point, because as we saw in the Super Bowl last Sunday, the defense can only hold out for so long.
Oh man. The other thing too that I want to say is, like, I mean, it's nice that we only held the Flyers to 2 goals despite all that, but their offense has been anything but fantastic lately too. So I don't know how good I feel about that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how good I'm supposed to feel about that going forward.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, I mean, look, you've got to take some silver lining out of this game, you know, somehow.
No.
But, I mean, you know, at least this loss wasn't as just upsetting as the Boston loss. To me, that loss was just, they just did not show up. Tonight, I mean, today they kind of waded into the game. You know, that first period, you know, they kind of have a fluke call go against them. I mean, what's new? It's the Sharks. But, you know, they could have folded. They didn't. They kept to their defensive structure for the most part. And they got a point out of a game that, honestly, they shouldn't have gotten a point out of.
Oh, no, I'm not disagreeing there. Like, I think that that Aaron Dell gets all my accolades, and is my 3rd through 17th star of the game, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Dell gave them this point tonight. God damn it, whatever. I mean,
You know, the worst part is you're like, at least I could like be like, I'm closer to tonight since it's like 4 o'clock here. There's no excuse for you, Landy.
I know, and I have the window open right now, and I can see the
It's like
light
the sun's
outside.
shining on your face, and I'm like, tonight it's winter and the sun's still out.
What did you guys think of Marcus Sorensen's game tonight? Today.
I thought it was okay. It wasn't anything super. Again, you know, it's hard to really pick apart players, especially like when the rest of the others. It's hard to compare like a Marcus Sorensen right now to like the other players when everyone else was so discombobulated. I mean, the only line that I was really happy with tonight was Hertl on the third line with Timo Meier. I thought that was, you know, that combination was great. I'm not so sure about Ward on the other side, but you know, I'll take it.
Well, let's break down the lines for today's game because Couture was out, and Kevin LeBanc did let slip that it was his back that was bothering him on the radio broadcast. Thank you, Rocket, for giving us that little tidbit. I mean, first we get Kevin LeBanc reinserted into the lineup. He looked like he had a lot of junk, guys, and it looked like that message was sent loud and clear that you need to have a heavy game, and you need to really keep the going when you're up here with the Sharks, and it looked like he was playing well.
Yeah, because I mean, the original plan was for Sorensen to be in the lineup and Kevin LeBanc to be a healthy scratch. So obviously, you know, Kevin LeBanc's playing for his NHL life right now because I think that, you know, I think they like him and I think he probably, you know, is going to see more NHL time. I don't think he's on anyone's doghouse list per se, but you know, he's playing for ice time now and he's playing hard because as we get closer to the playoffs, those spots, you know, those roster spots are going to become more solid. There's not going to be this, oh, well, maybe we'll go Timo here and then maybe we'll go Kevin LeBanc here. Like those spots are going to become consistently taken by somebody. So, you know, if your spot in the lineup isn't secure at this point, then you should be playing your ass off to make sure that you stay in this lineup.
Yeah, I went to the Barracuda game on Wednesday evening, and LeBanc looked like a guy who, you know, got the message. He was trying to do everything by himself, which
That was the
that
only
was an
drawback.
issue. But hey, you know, I've said from the beginning of prospect camp back in July, like this is a guy who looks like he tries too hard out there, and that's not a bad thing. So LeBanc showing that today is. Just that's what you want out of the kid, especially considering, like you just said, he wasn't even originally penciled into the lineup.
Yep. No, so I mean to come in and do what he did, I think fantastic. And he got
Oh yeah, no, he did. He definitely got robbed.
Now, yeah,
And
that's what I was gonna bring up next.
okay, well let's kind of go break down into it then. I mean, what did you guys think about the call? I mean, and you know, we've gone over this time and time again, and it seems like we will continue to go on over this time and time again until we get a clear definition of what goalie interference is. And I doubt we will ever get one because it is a subjective call. And you know what? Toronto one day will say, well, if he's out of the blue paint and you knock him, that's fine. The next day they'll say, oh, well, if he's out of the paint and you knock him, you still knock him, and it's goalie interference.
Yeah,
I mean,
Mike Nevis brought that up in the chat about what exactly is interference. Now, I didn't hate the not the goal reversal in the sense of because Randy Hahn on the broadcast said that this is really inconsistent. Well, the call itself has been kind of consistent. It's versus the actual rule that it is. That's the inconsistency. There is no way that LeBanc interfered with Neuvirth on that goal. However, the league has been continually reversing goals because of just the most ticky-tack contact. You can have contact. It's a game of contact. But so in that regards, I wasn't surprised they called it back. I mean, the Sharks, the very first goal replay that the Sharks had since they instituted the policy, the Sharks were spared a goal against Jones because of that exact call that happened today. But still, it doesn't make it a good call.
No, and that's exactly it. Like you have like All right, let's try that again. The problem I had with the call was, yes, there was contact, but there was no way that that contact stopped Neuwirth from making a save. He was going the other way. It deflects off his own player. It doesn't make any sense to me how that's goaltender interference. Yes, there was contact with the goalie, but, you know, again, you're right. There's going to be contact. Yeah, he got him on the arm with his stick. To me, I feel like if you're going to, like, some of these calls are so ridiculous where it's like, you know, if it's kind of like embellishment too, where it's like you call the guy for hooking and then you call the other guy for embellishment. Well, what is it? Did he dive or is it a penalty? It should be one way or the other. And I kind of feel the same way. If you're going to call goalie interference to call back a goal, then shouldn't that be a penalty? And if you're not comfortable calling the tap on the arm on Neuwirth there a penalty, then it should be a goal. And I think that should be the criteria for goaltender interference. Can I, you know, will I call a penalty on the play? No. Okay, it's a goal. That, in my opinion, that's the way it should go.
Landy? Eric? Did he freeze?
He's there.
Oh, he muted himself. Oh, he's having technical issues.
All right. Well, then I'll keep ranting.
We hope that the Landycopter has not crashed somewhere. So we'll get back to the Landycopter in a few moments. in the meantime, Pucknology Writers Room airs tomorrow.
That's true. Yeah, Pucknology Writers Room tomorrow. It's going to be awesome. Trust me. We have a survey, too. Look through my timeline. It's there.
Yes.
Check that out. I guess I'll pick up Landy's job here.
Landy will be back tonight, says AO.
Oh man, that's great. Look at guys. See, this is what Trump was warning you about. Here's a foreigner stealing an American's job. So
oh man.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Hey, and you sound there. Clear now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I just had to readjust my microphone and stuff.
That's okay.
Until we get an actual clear definition of what goaltender interference is, I think we're going to have this all the time. I think we're going to have this all the time. And it's just kind of something that we'll have to deal with because, it's inconsistent. I mean, it's whoever's working Toronto, it's subjective to whoever wants to call it that day or whoever doesn't. And you know what? The other thing too is, it varies from ref crew to ref crew.
Absolutely.
I mean, what was the call on the ice originally?
Goal.
It was called goal originally.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. To me, Toronto should just help facilitate. And if the guys on the ice said, hey, look, I had a clear vantage point, it wasn't goaltender interference, then the guys on the ice need to be the ones that make the call.
Right.
And they need to be the ones that are the first that kind of
right. Well, I think but the problem was it was a coach's challenge, so it had to go to Toronto.
However, and I understand that, but I think the problem that I see is that the initial call was goal. Right. That should hold more standing.
Yeah.
And then when you go to Toronto should just help facilitate and be like, well, this is kind of why we don't think it's a goal. It's
right
to me. It should lie more with the refs on the ice because they were there. They had the eyeballs on it, and Toronto should just be kind of like a secondary input.
And I realize that I'm jumping over Patrick Marleau's goal here, but if that is goaltender interference, then so is Wayne Simmonds' goal, which is not goaltender interference because he pushes Aaron Dell's pad into the net with the puck into the net. But the thing is, that's a follow through on his shot. There is no way that should be called goaltender interference. But I was waiting for DeBoer, since he loves to throw his timeouts all over the place. Why not just call a coach's challenge there? Because technically it's the same criteria. He interfered with the goalie, not really, by making contact. And if that's the rule, then that's no goal as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that because of the momentum from trying to make the save, obviously Dell's obviously already moving backwards because it's a breakaway. So his own momentum kind of carried his carried it into the net. But I think, you know, another thing too, though, is a lot of, you know, and we've been actually kind of good with this as Sharks fans for once, and I appreciate that. But like, you can't look at that goal that got called back and then be like, oh, well, you know, if that didn't get called back, then everything's different, because the Sharks played an ass.
Oh, they were horrible after that.
They were putrid. And yeah, you know what? That goal happens, what, 3 minutes into the game? If you can't get your shit together for the next 60 minutes after that, then, you know, I don't know, man.
No.
Hockey bag and go home.
Yeah, exactly. And we, like we had said, I mean, Dell gave them the point today. I mean, yeah. There's no doubt about it. And had they won this game, it would have been Dell's game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would have been first, second, and third star. You know, it's just kind of shitty, because the inconsistency is really, really killing. It's really killing calls. It's really killing the momentum and the jive of the game. You know, I don't know. And we're going to have this problem. We're going to continue to have this problem for a long time until we actually get, you know, a clear cut definition. And I know that the NHL has been trying. You know, they have their camps to kind of go through and to kind of adjust rules here and there. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're trying to be more consistent, but it just seems like every time they take a step forward, like introducing review, they take two steps backward. I mean, yeah, now reviews take 9 minutes, or now reviews, you know, they get Toronto to call down a goal horn or a horn to stop play. I mean, I had never seen that before prior to this season.
No.
And, you know, it's just so for every step forward that they take two steps backwards.
And I feel like the NHL isn't alone in this. Like, I feel like one of the complaints that I hear about a lot of other sports, too, is like when you bring in more replay, just how badly it slows down the game. Like, I feel like it's not like just the NHL that's kind of been stuck with the momentum draining vampire that is the goal, you know, the call review.
Yeah,
but I don't watch a lot of other sports, so you'd have to.
No, I mean, you see it in football. I mean, you see it in baseball, and baseball is probably the worst, because they get a few more challenges and stuff, and you know, you actually they get to look. They have their guy on the headset telling them, "Hey, you know what? You need to take a look at this," and they stall for time in between. And
baseball is already slow enough as is,
and baseball is already slow as it is. So let's kind of run through the lines today, because I think that's what we were kind of starting to talk about before we got into this. The Sharks top line started off with Carlson on the wing with Jumbo and Pavs. And then in the third period, they switched it up with Patty going up to that first line. I mean, what did you guys think of the top line tonight? To me, they were okay, but they didn't really stand out all that much.
I have a new drum. I have a new drum for puck knowledge. And I kind of wrote this today, and I've kind of like been on this thing where it's like the Sharks offense is like, it's like a puzzle, and all the pieces seem to be there, but none of them go together. Like, that's the best way I could describe the Sharks offense. They have all the pieces except for Donskoy. But even Donskoy, even when Donskoy is in the lineup, still same thing. It's like, there's just, I don't understand. It's like, it's, you know, you have this little 9-piece puzzle from, you know, 12-piece puzzle from McDonald's and a Happy Meal, and I can't put it together because none of the pieces seem, they're all there, but none of them seem to go together. That's the in my opinion, that's the offense of this team in a nutshell right now.
I wasn't really happy with any of the forward lines today, to be honest, and it goes back to a huge reason why the Sharks were outshot so badly, was that the forwards were down so deep in their zone today that they would have to skate an extra, 30 feet or something to get the puck into the other end. Like, at some point, somebody needs to hold the point. Somebody needs to man the blue line. You can't have five defenders back, because if you have five people back, then there's a whole lot more than just personnel issues. There's structural issues and so on. I'm not saying that the Sharks structurally are awful. This is one game, but it was pretty consistent throughout the game that the Sharks were so deep in their end, they could never generate any offense.
Yeah.
Go to the 1-3-1.
I no. just no, Ian. No. To me, I mean, there was two pairs of forwards that I liked tonight, today. Okay. Hurdle and Meyer.
Yeah, I thought Meyer had a good game.
Had some great chemistry. And I thought that Tierney and Marlowe together had some good chemistry for a couple of shifts, or maybe Tierney and LeBanc. But, I mean, when you have two forward lines, and heck, not even a full forward line, because I didn't like Ward on that third line. I thought he was slowing down play just a little too much. But when you've only got five or four guys rolling on from your 12 forwards, that's not good enough. And that's not good enough, especially with how mobile Philly's defense is and just how much they bring pressure from the back end to the front. And so, you know, it's just like you were saying, I mean, the pieces are there. It's just trying to fit them together. I mean, it seemed like Bodker and Marlowe had some chemistry before, but maybe it's because Couture is the linchpin to that group. You know,
right.
It seems like Pavelski and Thornton are good with Hurdle. Mm-hmm. And then when you put Carlson up there, he seems a little trigger shy. You know,
well,
he
and Carlson, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, for Carlson, for his first year goal explosion, I mean, that was never his game. That was never going to be sustainably his game. His role as a third line player. I mean, I think that's the frustrating part for me is like you keep throwing all these third line parts on that top line trying to get it going when you have a perfectly good unused Nikolai Goldobin sitting on the Barracuda going
and that's exactly where I was going with this was you it seems like you need to inject just a pure sniper somewhere in that lineup. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have a pure sniper, I mean, because I don't think Goldobin is a pure sniper, but he's more of a sniper than anybody else we have in the depth chart, to me.
Other than Marlowe.
I was going to say LeBanc, but I still don't think LeBanc is NHL speed yet.
And I don't think he's a top-line player right now. I mean, he might develop into a top-line player, and mm-hmm. I think he's definitely got the offensive instinct, too. But yeah. I'd like to see him bulk up maybe just a little bit and get a little bit more speed because I think he gets pushed off the puck a little too quickly.
Yeah.
So and that's why Hurdle works up there with the Joes because he is big and, you know, because mm-hmm. he does shoot. So, I mean, well, who else do you have? Well, maybe Meyer. Do you put Meyer back up on the first line? But Meyer was good with Hurdle tonight. Today.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know what you do with that top line.
Because, I don't know the answer.
Because once you have that top line kind of figured out, it kind of trickles down into everybody else, and everybody else kind of knows their roles and it, you know, fills everything out. But as of this moment right now, you know, with Donskoy being out, I think that kind of puts a little bit of pressure on everybody else to, like, go into a role that they're not used to, right? And then when you have Couture out, you then have to put – you know, Hurdle or Tierney in the center position, or you have to have both of them be centers, and then you have to have somebody like a Michael Haley or a Ryan Carpenter center that fourth line.
Yeah, I don't know.
The chat is bringing up a few names via trade option for fixing the sniper issue, but I think collectively they need more than just one player. But like Parenteau was mentioned, but Parenteau's a playmaker, and Iginla was mentioned, but Iginla has what, four goals this year or something like that?
Yeah, like,
and you know, if you put him on the first line, I mean, that becomes a really slow line. I mean, because the Joes aren't the quickest, you know, the fleetest of foot
right
in the first place. So I don't think a Iginla helps this team out so much. I think, I mean, you let's just take a look.
If anything, and the other thing is, I think if anything, you need a left wing, not a right wing.
Right.
I think there's a lot of right wings on the team, and Goldobin's a left wing, so.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. I think like a lot of people are going to be like, you know, you get in these stretch, and especially when you're so close to the trade deadline, right? I mean, that's obviously the first thing. Oh my God, we got to make a trade right now.
Yeah.
it's a 4-game losing streak. It sucks, yeah. And it's against teams that we probably shouldn't be losing to.
That's the hard
but
part. But
you shouldn't just look at that in a bubble and then discount the rest of the season and be like, oh my God, we need to make a trade right now.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think the other thing too is that some in the fan base are quick to say, okay, well, let's make a trade instead of quick to be like, well, let's see what we have down in the CUDA.
Yeah.
And let's see what, you know, what Goldobin actually is. You know, because he hasn't had a sustained look in over a year. I mean, over a calendar year.
I think part of that is the Sharks fans are trained to always expect a trade because they haven't had a forward prospect core in 14 years.
Right. Yeah. The cupboard's always been empty. So it's always been rental. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying like I wouldn't bring anyone in, but I mean, a lot of the names that get brought up, they're too expensive.
Yeah.
You're going to give up guys that are going, you know, either they have, you know, they're too expensive for a rental or they have term left where you're going to give up on a better player possibly down the road to have this player today. You know, the only guy, like, unless you're getting Matt Duchene, I don't want to hear about, you know, renting you know, looking for players that are going to actually cost decent returns. Like Matt Duchene, fine. I will open the piggy bank for Matt Duchene, absolutely. But that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing too is Matt Duchene is kind of a redundant part. I mean, because you have Logan Couture. I mean, you know, in order to land a Matt Duchene, I mean, it's going to take more than what most people are going to be, you know, palatable for. I mean, it's going to take probably Goldobin, probably Mirko Mueller and a first. That's where it starts.
That's right.
And that's where it starts. So you're going to give up two, you know, an A level prospect and a B level prospect, or maybe two Bs or two As and a first. Mm-hmm. And that you got to also remember that first is going to be a low round first or low first. So you're talking about 25th to 30th, God willing, you know? So, I mean, that's gets you in the door for the conversation.
Yeah.
But when you've got teams like Boston or you've got teams who have more assets and who are in more of a dubious position than the Sharks are, they're going to make some outlandish, you know, they're going to make some outlandish offers. Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing is you don't want to get into a bidding war with these teams that have a full cupboard. The Sharks cupboard is, I wouldn't dare call it full. It's in better condition than it's been in a long time, but it's by no means full. And, you know, look at your top players aren't getting any younger. So you can only, you know, I mean, the NHL is littered with teams that tried to trade their way out of problems and then ended up having to completely tear it down to the bolts.
To get it back
to where, you know, where it needs to be. I think Philadelphia's, you know, rebounding back from having to do that.
Yeah.
And to look at Boston where they're at right now. And I think the other team that you just circle as, you know, if the Sharks had continued the way that they were going is Vancouver. And you look at the Vancouver Canucks and you look at the state of that team and where it's at now, it was, you know, when the Sharks had that reset refresh phase where they could have, you know, kind of continued on the trajectory that they were or go into collecting and accruing prospects and picks and stuff. I mean, Vancouver did the left-hand turn and the Sharks did the right-hand turn. And this is the parallel of the Sharks of what could have happened. You just look at what Vancouver is and that's what the Sharks could have been.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Vancouver, too, is I think, you know, the two teams that we've kind of mentioned here is Vancouver and Boston. I think Boston, a big problem in Boston is they're still paying for the sins of general managers past. I think that as much as good Chiarelli did there, I think that when you look at what the mess Chiarelli kind of left them in, I mean, that's going to take some time to dig out of. Now, Don Sweeney, I don't think has done the most amazing job so far in trying to get out of it, but I think there's, you know, but at the same time, you look at some of the pieces they do have coming up, and there's at least hope there again. Whereas, you know, you look at a Vancouver where I think you have just meddling GM. And, you know, again, there, here's a guy, here's, you know, you got the Sedins there still wind up. You went out and got Louis Erickson when really what you needed to do was really, you know, just kind of reset a little bit harder.
Yeah, no, I mean, you needed to strip that thing down to the bare metal. There is one player that I find very, very interesting, and he's come up every once in a great while. But what would you guys think of a Radim Verbata? Because he seems like he's kind of a pure sniper that the Sharks kind of lack. Now, he's a right wing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can play left wing.
He can play left, yeah.
And what would you guys think about plugging him on the first line?
I'm looking. I'll tell you in a second.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, I do that in a heartbeat.
But, yeah, I don't know what his salary is for one, because I feel like he's making like $3
million. $1 million UFA next year.
What is it?
$1 million is a UFA next year.
Is a UFA next year. Okay, yeah. So here's the only problem with that is Verbata is the king of being awesome the first year of wherever he goes and then turning into Martin Havlat after that.
I'd still rent him for the playoffs.
Yeah, rent him for the playoffs. And
yeah.
I don't think he would come too expensive. Yeah. You might be able to snag him for a second and a low-level prospect. And maybe let's take a look and see what
you think a second could get Radim Verbata done. God, seconds are so overvalued now.
Yeah, I think a second and maybe, like I said, a B-level prospect.
Do the Sharks have a second? No, I don't think we do.
Yeah, but although Vancouver still thinks they're going to make the playoffs, so they might just hang on to him.
No,
he's on the Coyotes.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, see, this is how far off the radar Verbata has been for me this year, as I thought he was on the Canucks still. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, and then you guys said he's making $1 million next year. So even if he does stink it up next year, that's not a terrible hit.
Well, no, I mean, he's UFA next year. So.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said he's a UFA after next year.
No. He'd be a strictly rental.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Actually, I wouldn't mind that at all.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Doug Wilson, make the call.
Yeah, exactly. So the Sharks
becomes a second in Danny O'Regan, and then I want to shoot myself.
Okay, well, then I fire him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so here's the deal on the Sharks picks. The Sharks do not have a second.
Oh, right.
They have one third. They have a fourth, a fifth, and 2/6, and 3/7. So you would probably go, I mean, do you want to give up that third round pick? And so, I mean, it would be normally, I think that price would be a second and maybe a low level prospect. Now you're saying fourth rounder. Now you've got to give up a.
I'm thinking you're getting into like Chartier and a pick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Chartier or who is O'Regan.
Yeah.
I think it's Chartier or O'Regan.
Yeah.
For Verbata?
I mean, because you're now, because you don't have a second round pick, so you can't,
sure.
you can't do that. So if you're saying, okay, well, I don't have a second round pick. I have a third and a fourth. Do I really want to give up the third? I mean this year's draft isn't that deep.
No, I know.
So
I know. I just, you know what? I think it's a nice deal. Yeah. It's only $1 million on the cap, but I still feel like that's steep for Verbata. Like,
well,
I mean, but the other thing you got to remember too, he's in division.
Yeah, that's so, exactly it.
I know. No, I don't discount that. I don't discount that. But again, it's like, it would be strictly a rental. I don't know.
But I mean, look how much Doug Wilson has been willing to pay in the past for a playoff rental. And look how, I don't know, the trades that John Chyka has made with the Coyotes this season, you know, there's been a lot heading into the desert. Not a whole lot going on.
Well, Chyka's a wizard. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. Chyka's an absolute wizard. But yeah, for that price, like, honestly, if you're willing to take a third or a fourth for Verbata, I'm fine with that. If we're talking pick and prospect, then my interest is completely gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the teams that are currently out of it. I mean, the only other team that you're trying to maybe hook up with would be Detroit. And I mean, you look at their forward core, and there's just not a lot there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's.
I just don't know what on Detroit do you want, though?
Exactly. Yeah. No, there's not a lot there. I mean, what do you take from them?
This is kind of like offshore's topic, but it's sort of on the same. I mean, Thomas Vanek having a resurgent year and no one's noticing because Detroit is just that bad. But he's not a player I would want the Sharks to try and go out and acquire. He'd be one, too expensive, and two, it's Thomas Vanek. You don't know what you're going to get. Look at Bodker.
Yeah, 2.6 against the cap, UFA next year. I mean, again, it's not. I don't think it'd be the worst rental ever, depending on a cost again.
Yeah, but how are they? 2.6 million the Sharks are still in cap hell. Like,
no, I know. You'd have to eat some. Detroit would have to eat some cap, and then that's where you probably end up.
And Detroit can't. That's their problem.
Well, I mean, if you have them retain like 30%, I mean that's not too bad on them, and it helps us out. I mean, and you know, Kenny Holland and Doug Wilson, you know, have had trades in the past. So, you know, maybe could you call something out of there? Maybe. I mean, maybe if we're thinking a little bit longer term, do you try and look at an Evander Kane and try and pull? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that would be more of a long-term move. Evander Kane is young. You know, you put him with a Hurdle and a Meyer, and oh my God, that's a wrecking ball kind of line.
Yeah, but I don't. I don't exactly love Evander Kane.
That's because he scored on us, I know.
Yeah, that too. I don't like the people that score on us. And look, Evander Kane's had a lot of off-ice issues that I don't think we need in San Jose.
Right, and you know what? Doug Wilson's MO is definitely to have family-friendly kind of players come to the Sharks. I mean, yeah. he looks at that incredibly, you know, to the T. And, yeah. You know, he's never, I mean, maybe outside of like a Ben Eager or like anybody, you know, I don't know, maybe an Adam Burrish. I mean, those are the kind of, that's as far out there as he goes. He doesn't normally like to bring in toxic players into the atmosphere of the team.
I will maintain that I do think there is somebody on Doug Wilson's radar. I just don't know who that is, because for him to clear Wingles and Nieto's salary for getting very little in return, he's clearly clearing the salary to get someone specific. We just don't know who that is.
What about somebody off Dallas? I mean, because it looks like Dallas is starting to fade quite a bit. I mean, there's Lauri Korpikoski.
Mm-hmm. Dallas is, I don't know. I mean, Dallas, to me, Dallas is a team that, other than goaltending, I think they need to overhaul that goaltending tandem, obviously. But beyond that, I mean, they just need their, I mean, they're just, the defense hasn't been very good. You know, defense that they were hoping would make the jump didn't, but there's still a lot of promise there, I think. I think it's just an issue of getting better goaltending and staying the course in Dallas, in my opinion.
Yeah. And somebody was saying Patrick Sharp. Again, Patrick Sharp has had a lot of off-ice issues. I mean, he's
too much money.
Too much money. He's just very, you know, very inconsistent. I mean, you look at his goal production this year, it's not great. He's been in decline for the last 2 years. I don't want to touch Patrick Sharp.
No, I mean, look at 5.9 against the cap. I mean, that's you can't. The Sharks can't afford that. Yeah. There's no.
How about a Roussel, an Anton Roussel? I mean, he's a pain in the ass to play against. I feel like the Sharks.
Roussel, and it's like, bring on the Ducks,
right?
Good luck, losers.
I mean, but he's got 8 goals and 13 assists.
No. He can play. That's the thing. It's just Roussel drives me and everybody else crazy with his antics.
Only $2 million, though. $2 million next year.
That's not bad. That's not bad. And we haven't had that kind of agitator since Raffy. You know, since since the decapitator himself.
All 16 games Raffy played in the regular season for us.
Yeah, exactly. All 16.
There it is. So we'll bring in Roussel. We'll play the Ducks. He'll headshot Jacob Silverberg and get suspended for 41 games. I'm sold.
How about Corey Perry? I'd give that guy a medal.
sure. No.
And Tyler Gong saying if we get Roussel, send down Haley, then we finally get off the Haley train, even though he's been okay so far. I think Michael Haley, you had him in the game tonight only today because, Couture is out. I don't think that, I mean, I guess he was penciled to go in because LeBanc was going to be the scratch, but still, you don't have Michael Haley come playoff time. I don't see that happening. I don't think that that's what's going to happen.
I like Haley's chemistry with Carpenter, and I can't remember who the other one who was on his line, but they have good chemistry together. But again, it's just a matter of who you put Haley out there with. Because, I mean, if you're going to bring in Roussel just to be an agitator, you might as well just keep Haley. I mean, that's wasted assets going out the door.
Yeah. I'm glad that Haley came up, because like for most of the year I'm like kind of like whatever, Peter DeBoer has his roles, Haley fits said role, blah 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 blah. But when Carpenter came up, like this is the first I've actually been angry that like Haley's still in the lineup. Like I just thought like that fourth line with Carpenter and who else was on it, like Carlson, Carpenter, and it wasn't Haley, and I like that was pretty good to me. And I don't know why you would. I don't know. I don't get this love affair with Michael Haley from the coaching staff. I'm not saying he's bad. The guy can play hockey. He's not Mike Brown. He's not, useless useless pants, but he's not great either.
Well, I mean, I think the other thing that we got to kind of ask too, and we kind of going back into the playoff stretch run and what we're talking about here, do you guys think that, I mean, that Doug Wilson and Peter DeBoer are okay with having a half working Dylan DeMello as your seventh defenseman? Do you think they try and pick up a depth defenseman and depth forward? We, see similar moves that we saw last year.
I need a depth defenseman.
Think it's possible though.
Yeah.
I don't think we need a depth defenseman, but we said that last year and we got a Roman Polak.
This year we really don't, though. I feel like this year, as someone who's watched a ton of Barracuda games, we have options on the farm that I don't think we need to give up assets for a marginal upgrade from the trade market. I think Tim Heed is really good. I think that Tim Heed should get a better look in the NHL with DeMello being out. I know he's been up with the team as the seventh defenseman right now, but I'm perfectly comfortable with Tim Heed filling that role over spending assets to get someone else into Teal.
I think the other thing too, I'd like to see Joakim Ryan, see what Joakim Ryan's got and what he can bring to the table as well. Somebody asks, I love the guy, but when will Gaudreau be traded? I mean, I think you look at that asset and you say, okay, well, he's almost leading the team in goals, the Barracuda in goals. I don't think his trade value is going to be any higher than it is now. Do you sell high on that and try and get a Radim Verbata?
I mean, I would not be upset to see Gaudreau go for anyone because he's never going to break into the system.
I agree.
He's been continually passed over for whatever reason. Peter DeBoer doesn't like him. I think he kicked his dog. I can't confirm that. E5, Barkley Gaudreau kicked Peter DeBoer's dog, E5. But I really think like, yeah, there's a guy where I think that's the kind of asset you spend to get somebody, because
yeah,
as much as I like Barkley Gaudreau, he's not going to get a fair shake. I think he's a bottom six player for a lot of teams in the NHL. I think he's just being kind of, I don't want to say spitefully left in the AHL, but he's definitely been passed in the depth chart here repeatedly. It's gotten to the point where it's kind of the same as I felt like about Matt Nieto. It's like, yeah, Matt Nieto can be a good player, but he gets continually passed in the depth chart. Eventually, depth chart is what's gone off on this team on this road trip, that you need to move on and you need to get something for them while they're still worth something, which we didn't do with Matt Nieto.
Yeah, Tyler Gong bringing up a great point. At least he's not getting the Frankie Corrado treatment. And that's true. I mean, at least he's not wasting away up here for the whole year. I mean, they have had the decency of putting him back in the Barracuda and letting him, lead that team, offensively. Jay Clark saying he wants Gaudreau for a draft pick, though. I mean, Clark,
get something for him. That's my point. You're not, yeah, if you're just going to waste him away on the Barracuda, get something for him.
I agree, because I think Gaudreau should have been traded 2 years ago. I think that was when his trade value was highest. Honestly, to me, I'd be fine getting a seventh for the guy. because I really think the Sharks are just going to let him walk in UFA in the offseason.
Yeah.
No, you know, he's not a UFA, but I don't think they'll qualify him. So they might as well move him.
Yeah, I agree. And Tyler Gahn saying, you know, what do we get for a package of Goudreau, Mueller, and a third?
Goudreau, Mueller, and a third? Probably a second round pick.
Oh, come on. I don't know. I didn't get
one. No, I'm being facetious. But
I don't think, I mean, maybe that gets you a Roussel. Maybe.
I think it could get you something. Look at somebody who's good at developing defensemen might take a look at Mirko Mueller, knowing, you know, like a Nashville. You think a Nashville wouldn't look at a Mirko Mueller if they saw something there? I think they'd absolutely trade for him because we'd probably sell low on Mueller, to be completely honest. And I'm not saying that he's going to pan out here, but, you know, never underestimate what another team can do with the same asset.
Well, you know what? And now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, Detroit has always had a really good track record with defensemen as well.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, they might be able to take that. You know what would be kind of funny, though, is that the Sharks traded up from Detroit to get Mirko Mueller, and they ended up getting Anthony Mantha, and they would have both Anthony Mantha and Mirko Mueller. So wouldn't that be kind of crazy?
Yeah, but I could coach a team to the Super Bowl in the next day. So,
what, Kevin, where you want?
AO stole my thunder. I was gonna say we could get my boy Victor Arvidsson. You know, the guy they should have drafted in the third round a couple of years ago.
I don't know if we have enough pieces to pull someone like Arvidsson out of.
But he's a threat to get taken in expansion. So Goudreau, Mueller, and a third for Arvidsson.
Rob Iman saying Mueller would be good for the Rangers. I mean, the Rangers don't have a great track record with defensemen, though.
Yeah.
I mean, let me
Matthew Ford. He's like 32 years old. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there.
Oh no. I mean, you look at who needs defensive prospects, and I think you kind of highlight Vancouver. Then
Vancouver
needs
everything though, so that's not fair.
Well, that's true. Vancouver, I think Arizona might need some defensive prospects. Colorado, if you're looking actually for a team that needs defensive prospects desperately, it's Colorado. And, you know, the for sale sign is there. I mean, on everything not named Nathan MacKinnon is for sale. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the ticket is going to be on a Matt Duchene or on Gabriel Landeskog. Yeah, I agree. I don't see the Sharks being a good trade fit with Colorado for anything.
That's not a deal you do at the deadline. That's a deal you wait till the summer to do, because at the deadline they have you bent over the barrel. You wait till the summer, and then the offers are going to be a lot lower.
Yeah. I can't wait for a TSN Trade Center here in a few weeks where they're like, the biggest trade we had today was Barkley Goodrow. Anybody heard of this guy? I haven't. Next.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing too is I don't know what the structure is like in Colorado right now. I mean, just kind of going from the hockey ops and the general manager, it seems like that team is kind of in disarray. You know, and they just do not know what they want to do. Because if it were me, and if I was GM of that team, Matt Duchene, you have Matt Duchene and Nathan MacKinnon as your 1-2 punch, and you keep Gabriel Landeskog as a top line player. I mean,
I don't know why you would move either of them.
Those three are building blocks.
Yeah,
and you also don't shun Tyson Barrie like the way that you have. You don't, you know, you try and try and find the Paul Martin to Brent Burns as you do for Eric Johnson. You just find somebody that can play with that kid, and you go from there. You build it out from there. I mean, you have a goaltender that's good when he's not hurt,
right?
And you've got some pieces there. I mean, you've got a Mikhail Gregorenko as well, who's also a good piece. So you just kind of wonder with their management, you know, what they're looking for and what kind of pipe dreams that they're, you know, that they're kind of going through. Because, you know, from everything that we've heard out of them, it's A-plus prospect, maybe two A-plus prospects and a first round pick. And that gets you in the door.
I'm going to throw this out there since we're bringing up Colorado. Joe Sakic, you know, Is he just not right for the role that he has with the Avalanche? I mean, Wayne Gretzky, greatest player of all time, not a good coach. Is Joe Sakic just in over his head? Is he the problem?
I think the problem with Joe Sakic, though, is that he has so much clout with that ownership group.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And those owners love him, and he's beloved in that market. I mean, it's Joe Sakic. He's a guy's a living legend. So,
yeah, he's bought, and how that's going.
Well, right. I mean, but those two have bought so much stock with just their names,
right,
that it's going to be hard to kind of like kick him out. And especially after Patrick Waugh has his little hissy fit and leaves.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're going to be doing a lot of management shuffling. You know, anything, maybe give him a promotion to hockey ops, Joe Sakic, a promotion to hockey ops, and get a GM in there. Somebody, you know, a pure GM.
But, no, I agree. I think a lot of these teams are operating on shoestring budgets for their front offices too. And that's how that happens, where you got guys taking on multiple roles and president/GM of hockey, you know, like, 1 second.
All right. I guess the last kind of little bits that I wanted to touch on, I mean, how do you guys think Hurdle has progressed since his injury and kind of seeing him come back? What do we think of his skating? What do we think of his energy level output right now? Kevin?
I still don't think he should be in the lineup. I think that the Sharks refuse to let this guy fully heal. I'm not saying that he's playing poorly. He's just not playing at the level that a guy of his caliber should be. And I think a big part of it is the Sharks want him in the lineup so damn badly that they're willing to put him in a few weeks early, even if, you know, at the value of what? Like, right. Again, guys in the minors, guys on the third and fourth line or something that can do what Hurdle does, or what Hurdle is doing right now, and let Hurdle continue to recover before he blows out his knee again in April.
What are we talking
about? We're talking about Hurdle, and we're just talking about how he looks on the ice, what his energy level is like.
Did I not say Hurdle?
No, you said Hurdle.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was muted in a way.
Ian was muted. Ian, what are your thoughts on just Hurdle and how he's played, and you know, just what he looks like right now after coming back from that injury?
I mean, obviously he's taken some time to get going again, but I'm a big Hurdle guy, man. I mean, look, the best, you know, I thought one of the best pairs of players on the ice tonight were Hurdle and Timo Meier, who also hasn't, you know, has been really on or off. So it's hard because I feel like with Hurdle coming back, you know, I think too many people expected this big, you know, okay, now the Sharks are going to start blowing teams out again. And not that they ever really blew teams out, but you know what I mean? Like, with the way the entire offense is playing right now, I think that Hurdle's going to get just some unfair shit for just not being the savior when he came out from injury.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, to me, right now, Hurdle, I think that leg, I mean, it looks like he's kind of dragging it a little bit when he skates. I mean, it's not very pronounced, but he does kind of seem like he's pudging along a little bit. It seems like, you know, he gets up into the forecheck, and when he could make an extra effort to try and like extend himself and extend the play a little bit, he just doesn't have it. It just seems like he's kind of losing the puck a little bit too much. And you know what? I mean, he's so talented that he still makes great skill plays, and he, you know, showed tonight he was one of the better forwards on the ice tonight.
He makes plays around him better, period. Like, except for when he's playing on the top line, because nothing makes the top line good right now. But whoever Hurdle seems to play with, he makes better.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm kind of with Kevin. I think that they should have brought up a Goldobin and just kind of let Hurdle marinate for a little while longer. But you know what? This is the course that they're going with now. So you just kind of hope that he's building up that strength with every game he plays, and you know that he kind of just returns to mid-season form here in the next few games. Because I mean, the Sharks need that right now. Mm-hmm. Kind of all hands on deck, because they've got a 4-game losing streak. They've picked up points in 3 out of 4 games, which is good. But you know, their division lead is now only three points, and they don't have any games in hand. And in fact, Edmonton has a game in hand. So tomorrow they will play one extra game. So it's imperative that they win tomorrow. I mean, in order to keep pace in the standings, in order to keep hold of first place in the division, they need to win tomorrow.
Tyler Gong brings up something in the chat. I'm surprised we don't talk more about. Is it time to split up Thornton and Pavelski for a few games?
I said that pre-All-Star break.
Oh, okay. No, I agree with it.
Because I think that it's better served to have Pavelski center the second line, then have Hurdle center the third line, and then have Tierney center the fourth line. I've always been a big proponent of the four-headed monster, because when this team stacks up, you know, when this team is able to stack up a Thornton and then a Couture and then a Hurdle and then a Tierney, or a Thornton, a Couture, a Marlowe, a Tierney, when this team can overwhelm you with the center depth, when they have four quality centers going, there's not many people in this league that can match up toe-to-toe with them. And the only team that we saw that could do it last year was Pittsburgh. And so...
kind of want to see something here.
I was asked to turn the goal light on, and nice. Florida did just score an empty net goal to win their game against Nashville 7-4, so there it is.
There you go. Goal light.
So let's go ahead and quickly go through the schedule tonight and just kind of go around the NHL before we head out. Florida, of course, wins their game 7-4 against Nashville. Currently, Detroit and Columbus are 0-0. Tampa Bay will play Winnipeg tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific. Toronto and Buffalo is 4 p.m. Pacific. St. Louis and Montreal, 4 p.m. Pacific. Colorado, New York, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
Anaheim and Washington, the one that we'll be watching kind of closely, is at 4:30 Pacific. Pittsburgh at Arizona at 5 o'clock Pacific. Chicago and Edmonton, which is always a good game. Edmonton always plays Chicago really, really well, will be tonight at 7.
Yeah.
Ottawa beats the New York Islanders 3-0.
Go Craig Anderson, first time back.
Yeah.
Craig Anderson, you know what? I have nothing but respect for that guy and just what he's gone through and what he's battled through this year. Good on him. Boston beats Vancouver. The Butch Cassidy era in Boston. Butch Cassidy, that's what I'll call him. But the Cassidy era is still going strong in Boston. They win against Vancouver 4-3. San Jose, of course, loses in overtime to Philadelphia 2-1. And Dallas comes out big against the Drew Weber's Carolina Hurricanes 5-2.
Did you say Nashville? Oh, yeah, you did. Victor Arvidsson with 3 goals, just for the record. I'm never going to let it go, guys.
look, we all have that player. I mean, my big thing is Matthew Barzal. Like, I'm never going to get over that. Never. Never.
What do you mean?
Well, we always have that player where it's like, oh, man, if we'd only drafted this guy instead who was still on the board. And I get it. I have that player.
Oh, I mean, mine is Anthony Mantha. Just that trade to go up to get a Mueller versus an Anthony Mantha. I mean, that kid, imagine if you had a Timo Meier and an Anthony Mantha and Hurdle on one line. I mean, that's a lot of beef.
Yeah.
That's a lot of beef. Mike Nevis saying, can we get a Nostra Dumbass prediction segment? Well, speaking of which, the Sharks will face off against the New Jersey Devils tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. So if you thought today was early, tomorrow will be even earlier. And guys, like I said, it's pretty imperative that San Jose wins. I think they'll come out with a little bit of they'll come out a little angry tomorrow, I think. And I think the Sharks will probably win 3-1 tomorrow. What do you guys think?
I hate everything.
Ian, you're not going to give us a prediction?
They win. I don't know. Maybe they win. Maybe they don't. Who knows? They should have fucking beaten everybody.
Philly, Boston.
They should have beaten Philly. Buffalo. They should have beaten Boston. They should have beaten Buffalo. They should have beaten Arizona. I mean,
look, I mean, I if you come out of this road trip tomorrow and let's say you get
this road trip is a failure, period. Doesn't even matter what they do tomorrow.
If you win, I mean, you've gotten point. You've collected points in Buffalo. You collected points tonight or today. You collect points tomorrow. I mean, that's 4 out of a possible 8. I mean, that's. It's 500.
Something. Yeah, it's something.
I mean, it's 500 points.
You're right. It is something. It's garbage. If these the Sharks are better than this, and I'm totally here sitting here saying, you know, it's 4 games, let's not get too panicked, but I don't think we should be, you know, super pat them on the back if they happen to beat the Devils tomorrow and then go, yay, we got 4 points.
No, and
we should have gotten 6 at least.
Agreed. And I mean, Tyler Gong saying just a bad stretch with no practices. I mean, we can't stress that enough. They haven't practiced a lot.
Yeah. Oh, and I want to touch up on that real quick. Dave Hakstol, the Flyers coach, apparently has been complaining that the Flyers never have any time to practice. Oh, boo-hoo with all your East Coast teams. Wah.
Did you
ride your bike to Pittsburgh? Like, shut up.
Yeah, I know. Any team in the East that complains about schedule or about schedule making, and I heard it on Hockey Central at noon yesterday, where they're like, oh my God, Montreal has such a horrible schedule, and oh my God, they have to go to New York, and then they have to fly to Carolina, or they have to fly to Chicago or St. Louis. I'm like, oh my God, have you been to the West Coast? I mean, do you understand what West Coast hockey is about? You know, go suck a fat one. It's any time any East Coaster complains about the schedule or complains about how much they have to travel, go in the West, dude. You know, watch some West games.
You know? But by the way, my prediction is sadly 3-0 New Jersey.
3-0 New Jersey. Wow. I mean, look, I think it's fair to say this is the worst stretch the Sharks have played all season.
We have to give her 3 poop emojis still.
Yeah. The good news is the Barracuda play at 5, and I'll be at that game, and they'll certainly cheer me up after tomorrow morning.
I'm hoping so.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going to come on here by myself and just repeat F words for half an hour.
Are they still in first in the Pacific?
To my knowledge, yes.
They are.
Okay, awesome. Well, the baby fishies are doing well. Let's go over the 3 poop emojis of the night. Let's go with the 3rd poop emoji, Ian Reed.
My 3rd poop emoji goes to Brent Burns for just not being very good today. And I just, you know what? You need time. You can shit on Brent Burns. And this is going to be the time where I can do it and get away with it.
Okay. Kevin Lacey, your 3rd poop emoji.
My 3rd poop emoji goes to Eric Landy.
Wow.
For leading the list. With 9 tonight, Ian had 1, and I didn't count myself, but I'd like to think I was perfect. So, Eric, you just made the list!
Oh, goodness. My 3rd poop emoji goes to Mikkel Boedker for not getting that goal that he should have had when he had an open 4x3. 2nd poop emoji, Kevin Lacey.
Oh. I'm going to give it to Peter DeBoer because he's got to get these guys going. I didn't like the structure of the Sharks today, especially in the defensive zone. And I thought that after the last game, he'd have them much more prepared for today. And the Sharks didn't look prepared at all. So I'm going to give it to Peter DeBoer.
Ian, your 2nd poop emoji of today.
The war room.
The war room.
Yes, the war room for their consistently inconsistent calls.
Well, my 2nd poop emoji of today is Kevin Lacey.
Oh, wow.
For not wearing a turtleneck.
All right.
That's legit.
All right. Ian Reed, you lead us off with the 1st poop emoji of the night.
Paul Martin. Paul Martin was a fucking train wreck today. By far the worst defenseman on the ice for the Sharks. Had trouble battling in his own zone, and then they get out of the zone just barely, and he takes a penalty, and that just highlights just a really ridiculously awful night for Paul Martin, who gets my first poop emoji.
Kevin Lacey.
I should go with Paul Martin for everything Ian said, but I am going to go with Brent Burns, because Brent Burns is the one who stumbled with the puck and then realized, like, oh crap, this is happening, and still tried to play it again anyway, fumbled it a second time, and then off went Wayne Simmonds. So
yeah, my first poop emoji is also Brent Burns. He just had you just can't have that kind of gaffe in overtime. It's not for the high caliber player he is, for the beast that he is, he can't be making that kind of play. And I mean, like we have said, you know, in years past, Brent Burns giveth, Brent Burns taketh away.
So, I have to do an impression here. So let me do I'm going to do my third poop emoji over again in Brandon Shanahan. As the video clearly shows, Paul Martin can't control the puck. He takes it out. He takes a penalty. This is bullshit. There you go.
Wow, that was almost like a Babcockian.
No, Babcock, and you gotta get a little more connected. Be like, I gotta take my own for this and do my best. So you gotta get the puck in, eh? And sometimes you're gonna get guys that are gonna get going, and sometimes they're not. That's my Babcock.
All right. And I guess it can't be a Pucknology After Dark without a Kevin Lacey trade to announce. Kevin.
We have a trade to announce. Pucknology Writers Room is trading in the 7 p.m. start time tomorrow night for somewhere right around 8:30 Pacific. We're not really sure, but just tune in and watch after the Barracuda game.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to look more angry for Babcock.
Well, you see, you can't even do it.
Well, we're winding down. So,
dead.
Oh,
Tablet's dead. Bad news.
Dad's
some crying.
Dad's bringing down the law.
It's gone. It's dead.
So, if you would not mind, if you already have not, please subscribe down below. There's a button down there. If you like the show, give us a thumbs up. If you like it, thumbs down. If you didn't like it, but I don't know why you would do that. We're the awesome crew. And then, of course, you can follow us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. I mean, anywhere you can get your audio podcasts, you can get us. And check out tomorrow's Pucknology's Writer Room with the man himself, Kevin Lacey, 22.
Ooh, I'm the man now. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, with his lower third ID, his ghetto-ass lower third ID. Ian, will you be gracing the Writer's Room tomorrow?
I hope so. I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't. It's my fucking show. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, maybe you gave up rights when you started writing for Fear the Fin.
Oh, you're not supposed to mention that on After Dark. That's a -5 point deduction for you, sir. Landy did it, not me, Mr. Puck Guy.
All right. Well, before I get myself in any more trouble, thanks for tuning in, and have a great afternoon, everybody. And go get yourself some cheesesteaks. Make yourself happy. All right. Have a good one, guys.